It was 4 o'clock, and Robert Blair of Blair, Haywood and Bennett was thinking of going home. When your business is mostly wills, conveyancing and investments, your services are in small demand in the late afternoon. So he sat there, staring at the last patch of sunlight on his desk, the mahogany desk with the brass inlay that his grandfather had scandalized the family by bringing home from Paris, and thought about going home. In the patch of sunlight was his tea tray. At 3:50 exactly on every working day, Miss Tuff bore into his office a lacquer tray covered with a fair white cloth and bearing a cup of tea in blue patterned china, and on a plate to match, two biscuits, petit beurre Mondays, Wednesdays and Friday, digestive Tuesdays and Thursdays. Idly, Robert thought how much it represented the continuity of the firm. The china he could remember as long as he could remember anything. The cloth had come later, with the advent of Miss Tuff, the first woman who had ever sat at a desk in a respectable solicitor's in Milford. A whole revolution, Miss Tuff was. But the firm had survived the revolution, and now it was inconceivable that thin, grey, dignified Miss Tuff had ever been a sensation. Indeed, her only disturbance was the introduction of the tray cloth, now as much a part of the firm's life as the deed boxes and the brass plate and Mr. Heseltine's annual cold. It was when his eyes rested on the blue plate, where the biscuits had been, that Robert experienced that odd sensation in his chest again. He had never wanted any other life, but lately an odd, alien thought had crossed his mind. As nearly as it could be put into words, it was, "This is all you are ever going to have." And with the thought would come that moment's constriction in his chest. This annoyed and puzzled him. What had his life lacked that a man might be supposed to miss? A wife? But he could have married if he'd wanted to. At least he supposed he could. A devoted mother? What greater devotion could a mother have given him than Aunt Lynn provided? Excitement? He had never wanted excitement. He had known since his school days that he would go into the firm and one day succeed his father. And he had looked with good-natured pity on boys who had no niche in life ready-made for them, as provided by Blair, Haywood, and Bennett. There was no Haywood in the firm nowadays, but a young sprig of the Bennetts was occupying the back room at this moment. Occupying was the operative word, since it was unlikely that he was doing any work, his chief interest in life being to write poems of an originality so pristine that only Neville himself could understand them. The sunlight slipped off the edge of the tray, and Robert decided it was time to go. He had gathered his feet under him, preparatory to getting up, when his telephone rang. Always afterwards, Robert was to wonder what would have happened if it had rung 1 minute later. In 60 worthless seconds, he would have been away down the street. Mr. Heseltine would have answered his telephone when it rang and told the woman he had gone, and she would have tried someone else. But the telephone rang in time. "Is that Mr. Blair?" a woman's voice asked, a contralto voice that sounded breathless or hurried. "I am so glad to have caught you. I was afraid you would have gone for the day. Mr. Blair, you don't know me. My name is Sharp, Marion Sharp. I live with my mother at the franchise, the house out on the Larborough Road." He knew Marion Sharp by sight, a tall, lean, dark woman of 40 or so. She drove a battered old car, while her white-haired old mother sat in the back, upright and incongruous. In profile, old Mrs. Sharp looked like Whistler's mother. When she turned, full face, you got the impact of her cold seagull's eye, and she looked like a sibyl. "You don't know me," the voice went on, "but I have seen you in Milford, and I need a lawyer. I mean, I need one now, this minute. I'm in trouble." In trouble? In Milford? Meant one of two things, an affiliation order or an offence against the traffic laws. "If it's your car," Robert began.
"Car?"
she said vaguely, as if it was difficult to remember what a car was.
"Oh, I see. No, it isn't anything like that. It is something much more serious. It's Scotland Yard."
Scotland Yard? The nearest Robert had ever come to Scotland Yard was to play golf with Hallam, the local inspector.
"I haven't murdered anyone, if that's what you are thinking," the voice said hastily.
The point is, are you supposed to have murdered anyone? This was clearly a case for Carly. He must edge her off onto Carly.
No, it isn't murder at all. I'm supposed to have kidnapped someone, or abducted them or something.
You know, I don't think it's me you need at all. I know practically nothing about criminal law.
I don't want a criminal lawyer. I want a friend. Someone who will tell me what I need not answer if I don't want to, and that sort of thing. You don't need a training in crime for that, do you?
No, but you would be better served by a firm who were used to police cases.
What you're trying to tell me is that this is not your cup of tea.
Of course not, Robert said hastily. I quite honestly feel you would be wiser.
You know what I feel like? She broke in. I feel like someone drowning in a river because she can't drag herself up the bank. And instead of giving me a hand, you point out that the other bank is much better to crawl out on.
There was a moment's silence. On the contrary, Robert said, I can provide you with an expert puller out of rivers. Benjamin Carly knows more about
what? That awful little man with the striped suits. I'm sorry, she said presently. That was silly. But when I rang you up, it wasn't because I thought you would be clever about things.
Wasn't it, indeed, Robert thought.
But because you looked my sort. Mr. Blair, do please come. I need you now. There are people from Scotland Yard here in the house. If you would just come and watch my interests, or whatever you call it, for an hour, it may all pass over. I'm sure there is a mistake somewhere. Couldn't you please do that for me? On the whole, Robert Blair thought that he could.
He did not, now he came to think of it, want to throw her to Ben Carly. In spite of her dislike of striped suits, he saw her point of view. If you had done something you wanted to get away with, Carly was no doubt God's gift. If you were in trouble and innocent, perhaps Carly's brash personality was not likely to be a help.
But what possible kind of trouble could kidnapping be, he wondered as he walked round to the garage for his car. And whom could she possibly be interested in kidnapping?
Some child with expectations? In spite of the large house out on the Larborough Road, they gave the impression of having very little money.
Or some child that they considered ill-used, that was possible.
The old woman had a fanatic's face if ever he saw one, and Marion Sharp herself looked as if the stake would be her natural prop if stakes weren't out of fashion. Yes, it was probably some ill-judged piece of philanthropy. He was a little startled by Scotland Yard. Was the child so important that it was a matter for headquarters? The franchise was a flat, white house, surrounded by a high, solid wall of brick. It had been occupied as long as Robert could remember by an old man. And then Marion Sharp and her mother had begun to be part of the morning shopping scene in Milford, and it was understood that they had inherited the franchise when the old man died. How long had they been there, Robert wondered? 3 years? 4? They had not entered Milford socially. Indeed, the Sharps had an odd air of being self-sufficient. He had seen the daughter once or twice on the golf course. She drove a long ball, like a man. That was all Robert knew about her. As he brought the car to a stop in front of the tall iron gates, he found two other cars were there. One was a police car. The other was Hallam's, the local inspector. There were three people in the police car. The driver, and in the back, a middle-aged woman, and what seemed to be either a child or a young girl. The tall iron gates, lined in some Victorian desire for privacy, by flat sheets of iron, were shut. Robert couldn't remember ever seeing them open, and he pushed open one heavy half with frank curiosity. The wall was too high for anything inside to be visible, so that, except for a distant view of its roof and chimneys, he had never seen the franchise. His first feeling was disappointment. Everything was just a little wrong, the windows the wrong size by half a foot, wrongly placed by not much more, the doorway the wrong width, and the flight of steps the wrong height. The total result was that the house had a hard stare, an antagonistic, questioning stare. Before he could ring the bell, the door was opened by Marion Sharp. Robert noticed that her eyes, which he had expected to be a bright gypsy brown, were actually a grey hazel.
"I saw you coming," she said. "I didn't want you to ring because my mother lies down in the afternoons, and I am hoping that we can get this business over before she wakes up. Then she need never know anything about it. I am more grateful than I can say to you for coming."
She drew him into the hall, and he noticed, as he put his hat down, that the rug on the floor was threadbare. "The law is in here," she said, pushing open a door and ushering him into a drawing room. Sitting on the edge of a beadwork chair was Hallam, and by the window was Scotland Yard in the person of a youngish, spare man in a well-tailored suit. Marion Sharp said, "You know Inspector Hallam? And this is Detective Inspector Grant from headquarters." Robert noticed the headquarters and wondered, didn't she like the slightly sensational sound of the Yard? Grant shook hands and said, "I'm glad you've come, Mr. Blair. Not only for Miss Sharp's sake, but my own. I couldn't very well proceed until Miss Sharp had some kind of support." "I see. What are you charging her with?" "We're not charging her with anything," Grant began. But Marion interrupted him.
"I am supposed to have kidnapped and beaten up someone."
"Beaten up?"
"Yes,"
she said, with a kind of relish in enormity.
"Beaten her black and blue."
"Her?"
"Yes, a girl. She's outside the gate in a car now."
"I think we'd better begin at the beginning," Robert said, clutching after the normal. "Perhaps I'd better do the explaining," Grant said mildly.
"Yes," said Miss Sharp. "Do, after all, it is your story."
Robert wondered if Grant were aware of the mockery. He wondered a little, too, at the coolness that could afford mockery with Scotland Yard in one of her best chairs. She had not sounded cool over the telephone. She had sounded driven, half desperate.